Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is Side 2 of For the Record program number 542, Interview with Daniel Hopsicker, Catching Up with the Boys in Florida. This has been recorded on February 26th of the year 2006. Once again, it is my pleasure and privilege to present Daniel Hopsicker, the heroic investigative reporter, author of, among other titles, Barry and the Boys and Welcome to Terrorland, as well as numerous investigative pieces available on his Mad Cow Morning News website. Daniel, welcome back once again to our airwaves.
Pleasure to be with you, Dave. Pleasure to be with you. So, let me run by what I think my strategy is going to be here.
Okay.
And ask you and your listeners what you think. Okay, we're both agreed that I can't break a story to save my life. I could have pictures of George W. Bush and an elephant alone in a room doing something inappropriate together and not be able to get them in the National Enquirer, for example.
The investigation would be truncated. Go ahead.
Correct. Here I have identified and publicly identifying for you and for the world the name of a man who may well have been a co-conspirator of Mohammed Atta's, named Wolfgang Boringer, a German individual and a naturalized American citizen, a pilot, who lives in Atlanta, Georgia. And I can put that story on my website along with all the proof and the evidence leading to it, and cause a minor stir within our little community. But I'm going to take this story to Seymour Hersh. I'm going to see if I can't get him to do it. I mean, I can break this son of a gun. I mean, he can break this son of a gun. And this is solid, my friend. This is dead solid.
One of the things
because Amanda had identified Wolfgang as his closest associate, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And she had, in her description of him, said that he was an individual who had told her that he won his green card in a lottery, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Subsequent to that, we had identified the Wolfgang she was speaking of as Wolfgang Boringer, a Naples flight school owner involved in some shady activity at the Naples airport, and there when Mohammed Atta was there, in and out. I mean, he was in Naples almost as much as he was in Venice.
Mm-hmm.
But there's always this tiny little piece, and in the back of your head. I mean, I do the best job I can, okay, and I certainly don't throw charges around recklessly, because if I did, I'd have been out of business a long time ago. There have been people dying to sue me, like Rudy Deckers has been dying to sue me for me to make one mistake that would allow him to sue. So I like to think I'm very careful in what I do. And so going into the deposition with this individual, I was absolutely positive that he was, as I had asserted, an associate of Mohammed Atta's. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
But still there was this tiny fear in the back of my head. You know, it's like the dream you have of being naked at the prom, okay? And halfway through deposing him, he's talking about who Wolfgang is. He had bought Wolfgang's flight school from him, and he says Wolfgang was somebody who'd won his green card in the lottery. And you know, that's when my blood ran cold, because that was like complete confirmation now that Amanda knew Wolfgang, and that Wolfgang knew Mohammed Atta.
It'd be interesting to know just what kind of a lottery that was won in, because it certainly doesn't sound like any lottery I've heard of, but rather perhaps the sort of lottery that's available to the denizens of this subterranean network that obviously has operated in one extent or another for many, many decades, and through which a number of interesting characters have moved over the years.
Well, I can tell you for sure that if he won his green card in the lottery, it was a rigged lottery. I can tell you for sure that he received favored treatment from U.S. Customs and Immigration. In fact, that's how I found out as much about him as I did, and wrote about in Welcome to Terrorland, because another German flight instructor at the Naples airport, who was also deposed during this 2-day deposition, was angry and bitter that both the individual who was suing me and Wolfgang Boringer had fraudulently received E2 business investor visas, which allowed them to not only live but work in this country. And he hadn't been able to,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Even though he was better qualified. So there.
And it was Boringer, was it not, who was apparently operating under the auspices of the mysterious Flying Club of Munich to which you alluded in Side 1.
Exactly. And so while I was down in Naples, I was calling people I know down there and asking about Wolfgang Borringer. And I learned a little more than I knew. See, Naples is a very interesting little high-level society, okay? I learned that Wolfgang was a social climber, and he was a guy that hung out with a European prince. I have no idea from where, but I suppose that will come.
This was not one of the Saudi princes who was hanging around down there, but this is a European prince.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. I guess. A contingent of European royalty winters in Naples. It's a very rich city.
Mm-hmm.
So there. I mean, you know, that's the scoop of my lifetime, my friend.
And we're going to be hearing more about this in the paperback edition of Welcome to Terrorland, are we not?
Yes, absolutely.
All righty.
As well as several new chapters that I got through my interviews and research into Mark Shubin in Welcome to Terrorland, the son of a KGB agent who was ransomed out of Russia with Francis Gary Powers.
And Francis Gary Powers, of course, it was a shooting down of his U-2 plane that basically prevented a thaw in the Cold War, and ultimately the downing of Francis Gary Powers' U-2 was attributed to Lee Harvey Oswald's defection of the Soviet Union, became part of the official cover story for the Kennedy assassination as well. Mark Shubin was one of the many people of the international network that of which Mohammed Atta was part and that was operating in South Florida.
Very much so. He was in business with Wally Hilliard. He was in business with Ken Good, a partner of Neil Bush's in the Silverado Savings and Loan debacle that cost American taxpayers $2 billion. He owned several planes with 911 UN designations, which I found pretty interesting. And when I met him, he was highly intelligent, individual. He is the son of a KGB colonel who came to the U.S. and became a CIA pilot himself, at least partly because he was flying MiGs from the age of 7, or rather 11, rather, under the direction of his dad, and because as a U-2 pilot, fluency in Russian was a major plus.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, when I talked to him, I realized I was looking at somebody that had done things and seen things and been places and knew things that I greatly wished were better known.
Mm-hmm. And again, he is part of the milieu to which Mohammed Atta and the other 9/11 hijackers belonged in Florida, an international milieu, and certainly something whose operations go way beyond the scope of what is generally thought of as Islamic fundamentalism. Speaking of Islamic fundamentalists in South Florida and some of the things they do, Daniel, of course, one of the things that Atta and company did that is rather uncharacteristic of Islamic behavior. Not that a lot of Islamists don't do that sort of thing, but a few days before September 11th, Mohammed Atta and company went out. They were known to have a penchant for drinking and gambling, and they went onto a boat owned by the Sun Cruise Company. And that's a name that's been very much in your articles and a name that's been very much in the news. Tell us about the Mohammed Atta's trip to a Sun Cruise casino boat, and then let's talk about what you call the GOPMOB, the GOP mob, or the demo. Well, how do you like to pronounce that one, Daniel? GOP mob or just GOPMOB?
I was saying GOP mob, but I don't know how anyone else would say it. Not many people. It had been used before, but only a couple times that I was able to find before I wrote it. Now we're talking about the subject of the book and documentary I'm working on now, which is Bushfellas, Casino Jack and the Republican Thuggies is the working title. And the first thing I discovered was that it wasn't a single visit to a Jack Abramoff-owned casino. There were four separate credible news reports in the major media said at four different places around Florida that in the days after 9/11 that employees on the boats had contacted the FBI to report that some of the terrorists had been on their boats.
Mm-hmm. So apparently, for whatever reason, Muhammad Atta and some of his associates were on gambling casino boats owned by the late Gus Boulos. Very quickly, Daniel, review for us why Gus Boulos must be referred to as the late Gus Boulos, and who owns Sun Cruise Casino boats now?
Sure. Well, when we're talking about major sources of income to run a international organization, gambling is certainly right up at the top, along with drugs, isn't it? And in Florida, and I had no idea about this until, well, actually I did, and I'll tell you about that in a minute, but in Florida, there are 26 completely unregulated casino ships that are, it's like Vegas before Bugsy Siegel. There is, if you want to know if the slot machines on these casino ships are rigged, there's no way to find out because there's no agency that checks them. If you want to discover whether the dice used in craps in the casino are weighted, there's no one to look to because no one checks. If you want to know how much money they bring in on a nightly basis, there's no way of knowing that either because the reporting requirements are so loose that, you know, Meyer Lansky's is rolling in his grave in glee. So this is a major source of slush fund income. I mean, a multi-billion. And I think what we're learning, certainly through Jack Abramoff, is that Indian gambling and these casino ships have provided a major source of the funding of the Republican Party over the past half dozen years.
Mm-hmm. Now, of course, Abramoff is the lobbyist who is now probably in the process of rolling over on people and negotiating to get his own sentences reduced or interdicted. He's one of the main GOP lobbyists in Washington. He has had a lot of publicity because of some of the Indian casino-related corruption that he's engaged in, but something that has not had that much discussion concerns the fact that Gus Boulos, the owner of Sun Cruise Casinos, was murdered gangland style. Then his company, Sun Cruise Casino, was purchased by Adam Kidden and his business partner, Jack Abramoff. So basically, Abramoff and his partner, Adam Kidden, take over a company that had owned Sun Cruise Casino boats after its owner, a friend, as you've reported in the past, of George Bush, presumably the elder George Bush, was murdered. And you have been doing some investigating of some of the people that have been charged with those crimes and come across a number of interesting things. Tell us about Big Tony Moscatiello and his previous run-in.
I will. But the first thing I want to do is to draw attention to the date of the hit. Mm-hmm. Let me ask you, when was the $2,000 presidential race finally and completely decided for George W. Bush?
Well, it was in
sometime in early to mid January, was it?
I think the Supreme Court decision was in December, mid December or something like that. I'm not absolutely positive.
Well, and when did George W. Bush take
office? Well, of course, January 20th is when he officially assumes office.
Well, a little more than 2 weeks later, Gus Boulos is dead.
Mm-hmm. Almost exactly 6 months to the day. Well, let's see, it was February, but Boulos was whacked, right? February of 2001?
Correct.
And then, of course, in early September.
Right after George W. Bush takes office.
Yep.
And I want to urge on you the idea that those two events may turn out to be linked.
Mm-hmm.
Because we are seeing one mob in the person of the titular ownership of the casinos. We are seeing one mob family muscled out by another. The Bananos muscled out by the Gambinos.
In
I even think this has something to do with it, with the way the 2000 election went in South Florida. Remember how surprised Al Gore looked when Miami didn't put him over the top?
Mm-hmm.
I think Al Gore was double crossed by his mob supporters in South Florida, which is probably one reason why he wasn't able to pursue his challenge as vigorously as he might have.
Well, who knows? I think Al Gore was primarily betrayed by the Bush mob supporters seated on the Supreme Court. But that's there are a number of very interesting things going on in South Florida. Let's talk a little bit about how some of the many scandals that are erupting, yea, verily, as we speak, not only overlap with one another, but once again, some of the evidentiary tributaries running from some of the Iran-Contra-related drug smuggling activities course through, once again, the story of people like Randy Duke Cunningham, the Hammer, Tom DeLay, as well as the aforementioned Jack Abramoff. You want me to offer up an investigative line that we could maybe begin pursuing to at least shed a little light on this before we were out of time on this side?
Well, I was happy to read when I got back from Naples and turned on the computer for the first time that Mitch Wade, the owner of MGM Inc. In Washington, D.C., a defense contractor, in quotes, that went from not being necessary to the defense of America in 96 to being necessary to the tune of hundreds of millions of dollars in 2002, has now been convicted, pled guilty to bribing Randy Duke Cunningham. And why I'm happy to see that surface is because I've got more news about that little grouping out in San Diego than I've had time to write about, and we'll now do another story or two about that. It turns out that little nest out there included names like Peter Uberoth.
Basically the entrepreneur who was very much, at one point I think he was baseball commissioner and later was very much involved with the Olympics.
That's correct.
Also, a buddy of Arnold Schwarzenegger's out here. Uberoff's an interesting fellow. You mentioned that Randy Duke Cunningham. You've written a number of articles about him. Let's talk about Brent Wilkes, Randy Duke Cunningham, and how the World Finance Corporation, again, something that runs all the way back through the Iran-Contra activities that Barry Seal was involved in, something that, of course, is through the savings and loan scandal. And it appears that the World Finance Corporation was one of the early employers of Brent Wilkes. Tell us a little bit about World Finance and Brent Wilkes. How does Brent Wilkes hook up with Randy Duke Cunningham?
Sure. And in fact, this is what I'm going to write about. I did an interview with someone close to Brent Wilkes 6 weeks ago. And here's the story. Brent Wilkes approached this German software company that had a software that helped documents get in computers a little quicker than Xeroxing them. Wilkes said he wanted to rep the software to the Defense Department, and then incorporated a company of his own and sold the software through to the Pentagon, and you know, basically stole kind of the software from this German, which is called VP Max. And the vice president of VP Max was only able to attend. See, Brent Wilkes cut him out of the loop almost completely with the Pentagon, and he handled all Pentagon negotiations. But before he was cut out of the loop, he went to a couple of meetings, and one of the meetings included Representative Duncan. What's his name? Duncan somebody. He's a big House of Representatives guy from San Diego area, and with this guy and represents the Pentagon, where he was told by this Duncan fellow that he obviously didn't know how things were done here.
Randy Duke, there's been so much corruption that's been coming to light. An educated guess would be that an awful lot of people are not all that familiar with some of the major players and how, for example, the Tom DeLay scandal overlaps the Jack Abramoff scandal, which overlaps the Randy Duke Cunningham scandal. Let me see if I can synopsize this real quickly, Daniel, then if you could expound on this. Randy Duke Cunningham's associate, a guy named Brent Wilkes, set up a company, ADSCS, is it? It's ostensibly a computer company that's supposed to do something for the Pentagon. It actually doubles as a lobbying company, and the committee that Randy Cunningham runs channels hundreds of millions of dollars in Pentagon contracts to this company run by Brent Wilkes. That, in turn, doubles as a lobbying firm. It pays millions of dollars in kickbacks to a company that appears to be run by Jack Abramoff and that is overseen by two former associates of Tom DeLay.
Right, and shovels money to individual candidates like Catherine Harris in Florida.
Exactly. So that these aren't. It isn't that there's the DeLay scandal, the Abramoff scandal, and the Cunningham scandal, but rather
it's all one scandal.
Well, they're all operators on the same pirate ship, basically, is what it amounts
to.
You could
bring them all together in a RICO indictment, and justify it by saying you were indicting an organized crime syndicate. All at once. The RICO statutes are for things like this. And what I seem to discover looking into Brent, the upshot of what I was telling you about having interviewed the vice president of the VP Max, the software that Brent Wolf's company stole to sell to the Pentagon, was that he was in the meeting where Congressman Duncan Carter, I want to say, but I'm not sure his last name, was acting against the interests of the American taxpayers and deliberately inflating the cost of a contract and telling this guy that he didn't know how things were done here in Washington. In so many words, keep your mouth shut, son. We're divvying things up here at the moment, and we're not interested in economies at all.
Mm-hmm.
And what it seems to indicate, what I would bet as a betting man, but and it's a little slightly speculative, but not much, is that the scandal, the Cunningham scandal, is not about Randall Duke Cunningham taking $2.5 million in bribes. No. The scandal is that the $700 million that Cunningham was responsible for steering towards these companies went for basically phony work. So we aren't talking a couple million dollars in bribes. We're talking $500 million in money that Americans taxpayers well have paid for nothing that had anything to do with the defense of this country.
Yeah, well, basically, it's just flat-out corruption. In other words, it isn't like somebody's being paid, as you indicated, somebody's being paid big kickbacks in order to channel contracts to one contract or another. Basically, what Cunningham and, to a lesser extent, the other associates were running was basically a siphon through which hundreds of millions of dollars of tax money went to no place discernible, no place that we can figure out, other than people's pockets.
It's breathtaking. It's utterly breathtaking in scope. I mean, you always thought that, if the Pentagon paid Lockheed, $10 billion to crank out planes, that, there was some slush there that went to, Saudis and, here and there. But to see that $700 million in Cunningham-steered defense contracts went to companies that did things that weren't at all necessary to American defense, weren't considered necessary by the Pentagon to American defense.
Mm-hmm.
And you realize that all of that money, where all of that money went may be fraudulent. I mean, what did we get for that $700 million? I would like to see someone ask that question.
Well, we became more educated. We can look at it that way about what's really going on. Brent Wilkes, the guy who was running this dummy company that Cunningham was channeling hundreds of millions of contracts into, one of the things you write about is the fact that he seems to have gotten his start in business in the early 1980s working with something called the World Finance Corporation. Tell us real quick, Danny, we're down to the last couple of minutes. What is the World Finance Corporation, and how does this once again bring us back to the world that you've been illuminating for us, and Barry and the boys, Welcome to Terrorland, as well as the articles that are on your website?
Well, you know, you could probably talk better about this than I do, because all I know is it goes back to some guy that was involved in, was it Watergate?
Well, Guillermo Hernandez Cartaya, he's had his finger in a lot of unsavory pies over the years. He's best known as, he's part of the whole anti-Castro Cuban contingent that took root in Florida and whose operatives have cropped up in various scandals ranging from the Kennedy assassination to Watergate to the Iran-Contra affair. And that milieu, that South Florida criminal slash national security milieu, was the one through which Atta and Company moved as well. But the World Finance Corporation was one of a number of shady but apparently fairly lucrative financial institutions, which appears to have been part of the money laundering apparatus for the covert operations establishment that's right. Grown up over the many years.
Laundered money through the Bahamas, I understand.
Yep, and it's something, too, that comes across in Pete Bruton's book, George Bush, the Mafia, and the CIA. He writes a lot about the World Finance Corporation.
And wasn't that an outstanding book?
It was.
Years ahead of its time.
It was. It was one of a number of books, which if people had read it and taken it to heart, history might be very different. My understanding about Pete Bruton, by the way, to give you sort of the flip side of your own perseverance, Pete Bruton, who I think he got a Pulitzer Prize, he should have, certainly, for the work that he was doing for the Houston Post, he cut it loose after that. He wrote that book, which should have led to the criminal indictment of George Bush, and George Bush, the elder George Bush, instead got elected President of the United States, and I think Pete Bruton wrapped it up at that point. I think he became a journalism professor or something. He basically gave up active investigating.
Pete Bruton ended up out of a job. Pete Bruton got lost his job at the Houston Post.
Oh, was that basically why he was forced out?
Absolutely.
Yeah, well, that in one sense doesn't surprise me because...
You should talk to him sometime.
Well, you know, that's an idea. I've never interviewed him. I've accessed his work at considerable length over the years. Not recently, but in the early 1990s, did a lot of stuff by Pete Bruton. But, you know, I was mostly reading his work and accessing it.
He's been researching for a new book, I understand, for... he's kind of like Mr. Texas. He has that scene sort of wired.
Well, there's an awful lot going on down there, down in Baja, Oklahoma, as they say. An awful lot indeed. Daniel, your website?
MadCalProd.com.
Yep. And among other things,
want to thank your viewers. Okay. Well, thank your listeners. For their support as we move through these lawsuits we've been hit by.
All righty. Well, we wanted to, you know, on behalf of the listeners, I want to thank you for your continuing efforts, and it'll be interesting to see just where the investigation of the German connections down there goes, to the Flying Club of Munich, of all places. Certainly not something one generally associates with Mohammed Atta, but then you wouldn't associate the Carl Duisberg Gesellschaft with Mohammed Atta either. But as you pointed out, it's very much associated with Mohammed Atta. This concludes Side 2 of For the Record program number 542, interview with Daniel Hopsiker, catching up with the activities of the boys in Florida, or just the boys in Florida. This has been recorded on September 26th of the year 2006. Be sure to keep an eye out for Daniel Hopsiker's new editions of Barry and the Boys and Welcome to Terrorland. For Daniel Hopsiker, this is Dave Emery saying thanks for listening.